This is Diane Horn, your host on the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. My guest this morning is Joe Gatos, Chief Scientist for the Sea Doc Society, a marine science and conservation program focused on the Salish Sea. Joe is a licensed wildlife veterinarian, has a PhD in wildlife health, and for over a decade has been studying the fish and wildlife of the Salish Sea. Joe Gatos is here today to tell us about his book, The Salish Sea, Jewel of the Pacific Northwest, co-authored with Audrey Delella Benedict and published in 2015. Welcome, Joe.
Thank you.
What is the Salish Sea? What geographical area is included?
So the Salish Sea is a relatively new name, so a lot of people don't really realize how big it is, but it extends, it's the whole inland sea between Washington and British Columbia. So in the south, it extends from Olympia all the way north to the Campbell River and all the way out the Strait of Juan de Fuca. So all the marine waters that we share together.
Why was this area named the Salish Sea?
So for a long time, it's and still does, has names for certain parts of it. So there's the Puget Sound, there's the Strait of Georgia, there's the Strait of Juan de Fuca. But it's never had an all-encompassing name. And people started studying this area in the 70s. They were worried about oil traffic coming through, something people are even worried about today, increase in tanker traffic and that sort of a thing. And at that time, scientists started realizing, hey, this is not all these different bodies of water. This is one uniform ecosystem that functions together. And we should have a name for it because there is no name. And at that time, a guy named Bert Weber, who was then a professor at Western Washington University, proposed the name to the Washington Board of Geographic Names. And they said, yeah, it's a good idea, but it doesn't really have common use. And then after a while, people started using that name more and more and more. And then in 2008, he proposed it again. And the name is in honor of the Coast Salish, the first inhabitants in the area. And they were actually the first group to say, we are going to accept this name as the Salish Sea. And then after that, Washington and British Columbia and the United States and Canada all accepted that common lexicon for the ecosystem.
What is the history of the Salish Sea and the area around it?
So geographically speaking, it's relatively new. You know, if you were to get an aerial snapshot of this place 15,000 years ago, most of it would be covered with a big sheet of ice. And so through plate tectonics and all these geological actions, and then with late scouring by volcanoes, you know, the area was created. So we have this kind of north-south orientation, these really deep gorges and water that goes down to 2,000 feet. So, you know, geologically speaking, it's a relatively new place.
What is the history of the humans that have lived by the Salish Sea?
I think, you know, if you talk to the Coast Salish, and they know their story better than I do, but they'll tell you they've been here since time immemorial. And so from a scientific perspective, we think that they've been here since the glaciers receded, and they've been using the resources that are available. At first, not so much marine resources, because some people think there's a big freshwater lake here. But as those resources started developing, as salmon started coming in, they started using that, and that really defined themselves and defined their culture.
Would you give an overview of the biodiversity and wildlife in the Salish Sea?
Oh my gosh, we only have a half an hour time. I'm going to give you a really mile-high view of that, but it's a phenomenally productive place from a biologist's perspective. We have all these nutrients that come up and all this ocean upwelling and all this mixing that goes on. So there's a huge plankton bloom, and then that feeds all these different invertebrates. We have probably over 3,000 different invertebrate species that you can see with your naked eye. And then those also feed fish. We probably have over 250 different species of fish in the area. Marine birds, there's probably 173 different species of marine birds, and then about 37 different species of mammals. So it's amazingly diverse, and I think way more, people think of salmon, people think of killer whales, but when you start getting down to the nitty-gritty, there's all this amazing stuff that's right here in our backyard.
To what extent do the species of the Salish Sea live here year-round as opposed to just passing through?
That's a great question, because there are some, and invertebrates may be some of the examples, they're here all the time. You know, if you find a Puget Sound king crab, that guy's probably not going to be moving very far from when you see him when you're scuba diving. Same thing with the harbor seal. They may stay within about 15 miles of where you see him sleeping on a rock. But if you look at something else like salmon, most of the salmon, they go out the Strait of Juan de Fuca. They spend 2 to 4 to even 6 years way out in the Pacific Ocean, even over by Japan, and then coming back in. So there's ones that move. And then or even a stopover ground for animals that make these incredible migrations. So right now there are these really tiny little brown and white birds, kind of nondescript, we call Western sandpipers. And they're leaving Peru and they're leaving Central America and they're flying back north to breed up in Alaska and Canada. And this area, the Salish Sea, is a primary stopover site for these guys. So they only weigh like, you know, 25 grams, about as much as a quarter or 50 cent piece. So they need to stop and feed. And in about 2 or 3 weeks from here at the Fraser River Delta, there's going to be so many of them, you can barely see through them. So there's a lot that are here and a lot that are moving through.
What is responsible for the biodiversity found in the Salish Sea?
I would say the big driving force for the biodiversity that we have is really probably the nutrients that come up from the bottom of the ocean and then are brought in the Strait of Juan de Fuca and then get mixed up with the fresh water. And then that starts all this plankton blooming. So there's these little photosynthetic organisms that use the sun and then the nutrients and then these zooplankton that are running around eating these things like popcorn. And then there's fish that's eating them and birds that are eating them and mammals. And so it just kind of goes on up. But I really think it's that oceanic influence combined with the freshwater influence and all that mixing that goes on.
What are some notable Salish Sea invertebrates?
Oh, that's a good one. I would say probably the most notable one is the giant Pacific octopus. You know, people say, oh, they get to be 600 pounds. But I think if you talk to scientists, they'll say, oh, maybe 150 pounds. But still, that's a really big invertebrate. And it's the largest octopus in the entire world. And they're really, really smart. And I think that people really think about them as an icon, kind of like killer whales. But we also have other invertebrates in the area. We have giant Pacific chiton. We have these plumose anemones that get to be almost 3 feet high. I mean, there's so many different cool things that are out there.
What mammals use the Salish Sea?
Oh, I think that probably the most commonly seen marine mammal is the harbor seal. And we probably have one of the highest densities of harbor seals in the entire world. But there are other ones that use it. We have California sea lions. We have Steller sea lions. We have killer whales. We actually have three different types of killer whales. We have residents that eat salmon. We have an offshore variety that are closely related. And these guys actually specialize in sharks. And then we have a third type that specializes in marine mammals. So they're eating harbor seals. They're eating sea lions. They're eating Dall's porpoise, harbor porpoise. So it's just a whole plethora of things that are out there.
Which species are most prevalent in the Salish Sea?
I think, you know, mammals, harbor seal are one that people really think about. From a bird perspective, probably some of the gulls. We have probably 11 different species of gulls. So, you know, there's really no such thing as a seagull. There's a whole diversity of them. Salmon are really a critical key component from a fish perspective. But we also have a bunch of feeder or forage fish that are really prevalent that make up a food base for things like salmon and lingcod and birds and mammals. So there's a big suite of them out there.
I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Joe Gatos, Chief Scientist for the Sea Doc Society and co-author with Audrey DeLillo Benedict of the book The Salish Sea, Jewel of the Pacific Northwest. And you are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on listener-powered KEXP 90.3 FM, and on the web at kexp.org. Which animals are found in the intertidal pools of the Salish Sea?
Oh, my goodness. I don't know that I can count that high, but there's, I think if you're on the beach and you're walking around at low tide, which really occurs in the daytime in the summer and then also at nighttime in the winter, there are some really neat ones that you'll see. I think the key for most people is to sit there and wait and watch. So there's a thing called a tide pool sculpin. So you walk up to a tide pool and you'll think, oh, there's nothing in there. And if you just wait for a couple seconds, you'll start to see these fish darting around. And they're so cryptic and so hidden that you actually can't even see them until they start moving. And then there are things like anemones. We have these sorts of anemones that will divide and then break up and make other ones. So there's cool anemones that you can see there. There's little tiny shore crabs. A lot of people are kind of nervous about picking them up, but they're so small, they really can't get their pincher around you, even for a little kid. And they come in kind of purple variety and green variety. And I think it's just one of those things, the longer you look, the more you see that almost everything there is alive. There's different types of barnacles. There's sea stars and other things like that that you'll see.
Would you say a few words about the seafloor habitat and the creatures found there?
Yeah, so the seafloor is really cool. A lot of us, when we go out, we look out, the ocean looks flat and it looks really uniform. But if you were to suck all that water out of there, you would see these amazing mountain ranges and sand waves and mud floors. And so I guess the story to tell is that it's amazingly diverse under there. And so there are areas that are rocky habitats, like the tops of mountain peaks. There are areas that are sand waves, as big as what you may see on the shores of North Carolina. And there are areas that are mudflats. And each one of these different areas has a whole suite of different species that live in it. So you may say, oh, look at, these are these big sand dunes. And you say you could go down there and grab a scoop of that sand. All of a sudden you'd have these crazy sand lance fish that just started busting out of the sand. So each of these different habitats has a whole different suite of species. And we have a multitude of these habitats all throughout the seafloor.
What do you consider some of the most striking or unusual creatures in the Salish Sea? You've been alluding to some, but...
Yeah. I'd have to say one that we haven't talked about today that I think is really striking are the rockfish. So we have about 26 or 27 different species of rockfish in the Salish Sea. And you'll see them on menus as rock cod or things like that, bread snapper. But really, when you start to look at these guys, they're super cool fish. Some of them, like the rough-eye rockfish, can live to be 208 years old. Some like the quillback, which is a little more common, they don't even get sexually mature until they're 17 years old, and they can live to be 90 years old. So that's a really old fish in fish terms. And the other thing that I think is really neat and striking about them is when you see them and they're agitated, they put up their spines. So they have these dorsal spines, they have spines on their pectoral fins, spines on their tail. And at the base of those spines are actually a poison gland. And so they're in the scorpionfish family. So not only are they striking, they're a little bit frightening looking with all their spines, but they really are venomous, which is pretty interesting. So a long-lived venomous species, pretty awesome.
So do we have sharks in the Salish Sea?
Right. That's a great question, because when you think of sharks, you think of great white sharks. And we actually have a few sharks. That we have a dogfish shark that may live to be 100 years old. We have something called a six-gilled shark, and they're big, about 15 footers. But I'd say my favorite is the basking shark. Basking sharks can get to be 30 feet long, and they're not in the shark category that you think of tearing up things with their sharp teeth. They actually eat plankton, and they have a huge gaping mouth that could swallow a human. And they just go around with this mouth open and filter plankton through their gill rakers. And there's a great, great story in the book, and there's an image of one and a story of the photographer Florian Graner was in his boat coming up the west side of San Juan, and he instantly recognized one. He saw the dorsal fin of this shark, and it was as big as his boat, which is about 24 feet long. And the guy, he's a little bit on the crazy side. He's a great cinematographer, and he knew he had to get pictures. So he roped himself with a long rope to his boat. He was by himself. He jumps in the water, and he takes his video and his camera equipment and goes underneath with these gentle giants and just spends the next 15 or 20 minutes filming these amazing sharks. Super cool. Super cool sharks, but the basking shark.
How would you characterize the health of the Salish Sea ecosystem and the species that live within it?
That's a really, really good question. And as scientists that study the ecosystem, we're always asking ourselves that, because some things are healthy. We probably have more harbor seals now than we've had in decades. But at the same time, we know that the southern resident killer whale population used to probably number 200, and now we're in the low 80s, 81. So that some things are up and some are down, but I would say as a whole, we still have this amazing, vibrant ecosystem. We know that we don't have some of the things we used to have. We don't have the salmon returns that we used to have. We don't have some of the other fish that are around there. But I would say compared to a lot of coastal ecosystems around the world, we're in a really good position, and it's a really great time now to recognize, hey, we are like rock stars living on the back door of this whole ecosystem. We totally have to take care of this place if we want to keep it cool, and we can make it even better. So I guess that's a long way of saying it's a good place, but it could be a lot better.
What is most important in maintaining the ecosystem health?
Another really tough question from a scientist perspective, because there's so many different components in how the ecosystem works. So let's just take, it's an estuary. An estuary, by definition, is where you have fresh water coming in with salt water. We're not too worried about the salt water because that's going to be forced. The moons are pushing that all the time. But we have tens of thousands of streams and rivers that come into the Salish Sea. And if we start pulling that water out, irrigation or dams or other things like that, we stop these influence of this mixing. So even just freshwater availability is really important. We also know that we don't want to be putting things that we shouldn't be putting in there. So there's all kinds of contaminants that we're worried about. There's things like harvest. Our lives are really founded around being able to take fish and being able to take Dungeness crab and spot prawn. And I'm 100% for that, but we don't want to take so many that there aren't going to be any later. And so a friend of mine, Carl Safina, said, well, when you fish like there's no tomorrow, that's what you get, is no tomorrow. We definitely don't want to do that. So we have to watch all of the different components and make sure all of them are doing well. It's kind of like when you're driving your car, you're watching the gas tank. You don't want to run out of gas. You're watching your oil pressure. You're watching your tire pressure. All of those things are important. And if one of them goes sour, you may not be driving very far.
What is the importance of salmon to the Salish Sea ecosystem?
Yeah, I would say if we had to pick one species that kind of defined this ecosystem, it would be salmon. And we are the southernmost latitude where we have all five species of Pacific salmon, which is a super cool thing to have. And so salmon are great because they are a beautiful linkage between the ocean and the freshwater and the forest. And the ecosystem is really defined by all of those things. So they capture nutrients from the open ocean. And then when they come back to spawn, they bring those nutrients all the way up the rivers. And then when they die after they spawn, they feed the trees that protect the stream. Their rotting carcasses feed the young that hatch out. And there are over 100 different vertebrate species alone that just depend on salmon, not even including all the microscopic and invertebrate type things. And they feed people. And they're really the spirit fish of the Coast Salish. They're the icons of those people. So I think they're critical.
Would you say more about the role that the surrounding forest plays in the ecosystem?
Yeah, a lot of people think Salish Sea, and they think that sea stops right at the water's edge. But like I said earlier, it's an estuary, so we have to have fresh water, and we have to have the forest. And we know what happens on land also happens in the water. So the ecosystem really extends all the way into the forest. And the forest acts as kind of a buffer. It takes fresh water, it sponges it up, it delivers it at a nice rate for all the animals that need to swim up the stream, like the salmon. And it also hosts a lot of different things. So there are birds, like the marbled murrelet, that nests in old growth forest. But what do they eat? They fly all the way out into the ocean and they're eating forage fish, and then they're flying back and feeding their babies. So, you know, that's just an example of how it's all linked together. You can't separate the two.
What is the importance of the Salish Sea to the humans that live near it?
I think it has a different role in everybody's life, but I think for the most part, it is the number one key defining factor for people that live around here. I mean, if you think about it, it defines our weather patterns. It helps feed us. It provides jobs. It provides million-dollar waterfront views. It provides tourism. It provides recreation. I think it's so ingrained in all of us, we would have trouble defining ourselves if we didn't have it. It really is a defining aspect of our area and of the people that are in the area.
Well, you've alluded a bit to this, but which species in the Salish Sea are of commercial value?
Yes, there's a suite of them. Salmon are definitely at the top, right? And things like Dungeness crab. We have a huge Dungeness crab fishery. We have a huge shellfish fishery. These are ones that people go out and harvest gooey duck, or people harvest clams. We have one of the biggest shellfish industries in the United States. But I would be remiss if I didn't talk about the species that are important economically that we don't harvest. So even something like watchable wildlife, this is going to watch killer whales or going to watch birds. It's a multi-million dollar industry around here. Watchable wildlife in Washington State alone probably has an economic impact of something like $2 billion a year. So, you know, there's a lot of different species that we harvest that we think about, but there's a lot of species that we watch that also are big economic drivers.
You are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Joe Gatos, Chief Scientist for the Sea Dog Society and co-author with Audrey DeLello Benedict of the book The Salish Sea, Jewel of the Pacific Northwest. What are the top issues that need to be resolved concerning the Salish Sea?
Well, I think one of the biggest issues, Diane, is that we're sitting on this gem of a gold mine that defines all of us culturally and as individuals and as a region. And I think a lot of people take it for granted, and a lot of people just aren't aware of how amazing or how important it is. And I think that's a really critical issue, because if you don't love something, you're not quite as likely to take care of it. And that was a big reason that we made this book. We said, look, we want one-stop shopping where people can pick it up and have pictures that are so candy, so beautiful, they're like sushi, and then read something and learn about it, because we feel like the more people that we can get to care about it and to be thinking about it in their daily lives, the better decisions they're going to make, and then the more they're going to think about stewarding it as a resource, right? We got a lot of things in our daily life that grab our attention. Traffic, we've got kids, we've got jobs, and those are really important things we need to think about, but we also need to think about what's behind all of this, what contributes to our quality of life. And I think if we can get people to embrace it and to understand that we're a part of it and we can enjoy it, but we also have to take care of it, I think we're going to be a lot better off.
Well, in a sense, you've been alluding to this, but what are the key threats to the health of the Salish Sea?
So I would say, you know, one of the big threats is underappreciation. We don't want to forget that it's there, that we need to take care of it. And if you look back historically from a scientific perspective, we've not always done a good job of stewarding it. So we've over-harvested species. We've over-harvested salmon and other things like that. We've also left a legacy of chemicals. We've dumped PCBs and things like DDT, dioxins and furans in the water that we're still seeing. And those are impacting the Salish Sea still. And I think there's a lot of other subtle things I alluded to earlier. What's the availability of fresh water? How are we changing the shorelines? And are the shorelines still making their function and doing that? So I think there's a group of things that we need to take care of. It's kind of like going to the doctor and saying, hey, what do I need to do? Do I need to quit smoking or start exercising or eat better or quit drinking so much alcohol? And the doctor might say, hey, you actually got to pay attention to all of those things. And I think that's really where we are right now. We need to pay attention to this suite of things that are going on right now.
So then what are the best steps to take to help protect the Salish Sea?
Yeah, I think that, and I probably alluded to this once or twice before, but I think one of the best steps that we can all take is recognize that whatever we do as people on land affects the ocean. And so for everybody, what they can do is going to take a different role. For somebody, it may be, hey, I'm going to ride my bike once a week. For other people, it may be, hey, I'm going to pull out a bulkhead and restore it in its natural way so it'll provide more for life. Other people may say, hey, I'm really concerned about increased in vessel traffic and the noise and how that's going to affect species like fish and birds and killer whales. I'm gonna promote that we limit the amount of transportation increases we have in the area. So I think there is a whole bunch of different things that people can do, and we all just have to ask ourselves, what can I do as an individual? What steps can I take? Because, you know, it all makes a difference.
What do you hope your book will accomplish?
Well, I guess first of all, we hope that people enjoy it. You know, I think when you make a piece of artwork, you want people to enjoy it. And I think the goal is that no matter where you open this book, you want to turn the page and get more. And we hope that they like to read it and look at it. But I think the real nefarious part of what we want to do is we want people to care. We want people to say, gosh, this place is amazing. We want them to incorporate some fun facts into their life. We want them to say, oh my gosh, did you know a common mer can dive 590 feet deep? That's not that common. That's incredible. And then start to own that and have the Salish Sea be a part of who we are as a society.
Would you like to say a few words about the Sea Doc Society?
Sure, I'd love to. I work for a program called the Sea Doc Society. We're a program out of the veterinary school at UC Davis, and we're interested in healthy wildlife and healthy ecosystems. And we're really focused on the Salish Sea as the ecosystem. We're interested in wildlife health, human health, and ecosystem health. And what we do is we fund and conduct science, and then we try and make sure that that science and that information gets out to people that use it. So these are people that use it to make daily decisions, managers, or even policymakers.
Well, what's the message you'd like to leave our listeners with?
Well, I'd like to say, make sure you pick up a copy of the book. Make sure you share it with your friends. And I'd be really surprised if by the time you finish the book, you didn't love the Salish Sea as much as I do.
Well, thanks so much for being here, Joe.
Hey, thanks for having me, Diane.
You were just listening to Joe Gatos, Chief Scientist for the Sea Doc Society and co-author with Audrey Dalala Benedict of the book The Salish Sea, Jewel of the Pacific Northwest, published in 2015 by Sasquatch Books. Both Joe and Audrey will be at Town Hall Seattle Tuesday, April 14th at 7:30 p.m. for a presentation and book signing. They will also give a talk at Everett Community College on April 15th at 6:30 p.m., followed by a screening of The Unknown Sea, a film about the Salish. And on April 28th, Joe will be at Third Place Books, Lake Forest Park, for a presentation and signing at 7 p.m. The sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters program you have just heard will be on the streaming archive section of KEXP's website at kexp.org for the next 14 days. In addition, sustainability segment interviews are available as podcasts, along with KEXP's music podcasts. Go to kexp.org, click on Demand, and then Podcasting. I'm Diane Horn. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in to the sustainability segment again next week on listener-powered 90.3 FM and KEXP.org.